One proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st of April, Anno Domini 2012, and you're lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we've got two solid hours of news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. First, let me start by telling you that we have indeed reached our goal for this pledge drive. In fact, we beat it by a couple of $100. So I want to personally extend my thanks to all the listeners of our station who were kind enough to join in the pledge drive, and particularly all the friends of the show who really did such great things for us. Obviously, I want to start with Dee and with Scott, who not only opened their hearts and wallets to us, but also their area in Second Life, where Steve and I will join them tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time. And Carl and Fritz and Scott and Anonymous and Al and Ray and Victor and Dan and Gary and another Anonymous and Mark and George and Sarah and Dar and Ed and Gert and Sam and Bill and Dan and Michael and Gary and Carl and Mike and Steve and Dennis and Valania and Christopher and James and Carl and Barb and George and Angela and my friend Ida and Joanne and Larry and Jim and Jerry and Andrew. Thank you all. Friends of the show, friends of this station, we beat our goal, and you were a large part of that. So thank you all so much for your generous donations. We'll be bringing you months and months and months of more and more and more sound bites. Whether you like it or not, we'll be here doing that. All right.
No choice.
That's right. Let's start with the news. I'll do the news while you give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I don't have to say, you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. But of course you still can, you know. You don't have to stop just because the pledge drive is over. Anyway, here's the deal. The principles of openness and universal access that underpinned the creation of the internet three decades ago are under greater threat than ever. Ironically, according to Google co-founder Sergey Brin. In an interview with The Guardian, Brin warned that there were very powerful forces that have lined up against the open internet on all sides and around the world. I am more worried than I have been in the past, he said. It's scary. This from the head of Google. The threat to the freedom of the internet comes, he claims, from a combination of governments increasingly trying to control access and communication by their citizens, the entertainment industry's attempts to crack down on piracy, and the rise of restrictive walled gardens such as Facebook and Apple, which tightly control what software can be released on their platforms. The 38-year-old billionaire whose family fled anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union was widely regarded as having been the driving force behind Google's partial pullout from China in 2010 over concerns about censorship and cyber attacks. He said 5 years ago he did not believe China or any country could effectively restrict the internet for long, but now says he has been proven wrong. I thought there was no way to put the genie back in the bottle, but now it seems in certain areas the genie has been put back in the bottle. He said he was most concerned by the efforts of countries such as China, Saudi Arabia, and Iran to censor and restrict use of the internet, but warned that the rise of Facebook and Apple, which have their own proprietary platforms and control access to their users, risks stifling innovation and balkanizing the web. There's a lot to be lost, he said. For example, all the information in apps, those data are not crawlable by web crawlers. You cannot search it, which to Google is the cardinal sin. Brin's criticism of Facebook is likely to be controversial. Google's upstart rival has seen explosive growth. It signed up half of Americans with computers and more than 800 million members worldwide. Brin and he said he and co-founder Larry Page would not have been able to create Google if the internet was dominated by Facebook. You have to play by their rules, which are really restrictive, he said. The kind of environment that we developed Google in, the reason we were able to develop a search engine at all is that the web is so open. Once you get too many rules, that will stifle innovation. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the greatest threat to web freedom is, your choices are Google, Facebook, Apple, and I'll tell you in the opinions. So far, you, our listeners, believe that Facebook by far is the greatest threat, followed by Google, I'll tell you in the opinions, and then one person voted Apple. One lonely soul voted Apple. And, of course, I know you have more to say, and if I miss the one you like, which I know many of you will, without even looking, I will tell many of you will say government, check the yellow box underneath the poll, and you will see a link that says, give us your opinion. Click on that. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you will be able to enter your opinion. Please, please, please keep it clean. And of course, that's our question to you. What's the greatest threat to web freedom? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I do like the irony, I think, of Google saying that Facebook is a threat to privacy. However, the difference is they're not really saying it's a threat to privacy. They're saying it's a threat to openness. For example, if you wanted to, well, actually, I've got another thing of that somewhere which we may or may not get to. If you want to get your data from Google, they have a download area. So if you're a Google Plus user, or you're using Picasa, or you're using any of those other things, whatever you want to do, all you really have to do is go to that area, that download area. It used to be called the Data Liberation Front, which I find highly amusing, and say, I want all of my data, and it'll zip it all up and send it to you. No problem whatsoever. They say you can do the same thing for Facebook. I've been waiting 6 months for mine. And since then, of course, I've had more data up there, so I'm not sure what I'll get, if anything, ever. Twitter, I think you just don't get anything. Twitter's very ephemeral to begin with, so there's nothing that you would want back anyway, really. Except, of course, you know, if you're one of those people who uses any one of the hundreds of Twitter clients that are available, particularly on your mobile device, they know where you're going and where you are and where you've been and everything else. So there's lots and lots of data that all of them are collecting on you. Google, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, everybody, that you'll probably never see.
A lot of the clients have their own logging so that you can log it yourself before you send it. But it's nice to be able to get your data back. Although, you know, like you said, it's all ephemeral. One of the problems we've actually reported on is if you try to delete something from Facebook, it's not necessarily gone. It's good because they have backups of everything, so if you accidentally delete it, it can often get it back. But it's bad because if you wanted it deleted, it's still there somewhere in one of their backup servers. And if someone has bookmarked a link, they can get right to it. We've run into that at MacAvitt, our store. We updated our website. But some of the old web pages are still there, and if someone bookmarked the old page, they can still get to it. Right. And the data is woefully out of date now.
Right. You need to forward those pages.
We
ran into that situation ourselves just yesterday, I think it was. My wife has a new car. Well, new to her. It's a used car. It's a Honda Element, which she has, of course, named Baybar the Element. And
she's as bad as my wife used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Lori used to name, as a matter of fact, her last car was Charlie.
Sure. Sure.
She likes saying she could get into Charlie.
We'll move on now. I had a Bel Air. The bottom of the B had broken off and the EL were gone. So, of course, I had to name it Pierre.
Cool.
So it was Pierre. That was...
Cute.
But I like that.
But I had already named it Bucephalus, which was the name of Alexander the Great's war horse, which, oh, maybe that's what I'll have to call my new car, which was, it was afraid of its own shadow, apparently. That's the legend. And so he always had to charge into the sun. It was the only thing it was afraid of. So
he had his own coin.
Yeah, the horse had his own coin. So he was Bucephalus Pierre for many years. And it was a big old Bel Air, a 68 Bel Air. And so, you know, you could fit five or six regiments in the thing and still have plenty of room in the trunk. So,
had an old Dodge Monaco like that in high school. 72 Monaco, you could fit like 12 people in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guys could lay in the back window.
We used to fit an entire theater company, all our costumes and props in it and go places. But the point was, she got this new element, used element, and we took a picture of her on it and posted the picture. And then she said, oh, I like the other picture you took better. So she deleted that one. And about half an hour later, people started responding to the deleted post.
Yep. Too late.
Yeah. And it literally was, oh, you know what? I like the other one better. I meant to upload the other one. So it was upload, look at it, delete it, upload the other one, and people were answering the first one. It was just very weird. It was just very, very weird.
Real-time live backup, which is pretty good at their end.
Yeah. It's not, well, yeah, they just don't delete anything.
Yeah.
I mean, people talk about stuff that they've deleted years ago. If somebody bookmarked it, it's still out there at that bookmark.
Yep.
You just don't get rid of it.
Well, it's the way hard drive works. You mark something for deletion. It's not really deleted until you overwrite it. But Facebook, they buy another hard drive and they don't have to overwrite it.
Well, but more importantly, I don't even think they mark it for deletion. I just think they mark it for not showing up.
Yeah.
Which is a very different thing.
They're not display.
Right.
Well, in case someone accidentally marked delete and they want to get it back.
Yeah. After a year and a half, though.
Yeah.
I mean, how long is it going to take you to notice that picture is no longer there or that you even care at that point?
Yep.
And this is, this is what I tell these kids all the time, and I've said it here before as well. When I was their age, I did things the statute of limitations is still not run out on, but nobody had a camera. Well, Mark Dupre had a camera, but he knew when to not take pictures. Whereas nowadays, everybody's got a camera in their cell phone. Everybody's taking pictures and uploading them immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one good thing about that is that everyone's got dirt on everyone, so
I suppose it
doesn't really matter.
I suppose. If you're the person who cares about that dirt.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can get into a little bit of trouble with that. My wife, because I took another picture last night, it now actually says she's got stick-on letters on the raised chrome, they look like they were made for it, Baybar the element. Over the word element, Baybar the. So I took a picture of that, and that's up on both my Google Plus, and she's got a picture on her Facebook. That's the one she replaced. And she said, I took the picture, I lowered my phone, and she said, is it up there yet?
Yeah.
I said, well, probably. Already, yes. Yes, it probably is.
Like I said, instant gratification is what we've gotten to as far as a society now.
Yep.
And it just takes you to kick back once when you go to a client, at least for me, and they're still doing dial-up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they wanted me to do updates? No.
Yeah.
Ain't happening.
Sometimes there's so much crap. I hardly ever log into my Facebook account because there's so much crap.
I only use Facebook to keep in touch with my daughter and a couple of other friends.
I friended some old high school friends.
My college reunion
is
coming up, and my friend Tricia has strong-armed me.
Well, my nephew, who's in the Army down in Fort Hood, my brother's got a gorgeous granddaughter.
Yeah.
She's just about a year and a half. And she has the darkest, curliest bush of hair. It's one that, in these cheeks, you just want to go over and bite them.
Oh, yeah.
She is adorable.
You just pinch them, pick them
up,
and shake
them. Yes. And they're coming up the end of the May. So I'm anxious to see her because, Ryan and the Diana have a wedding to come to, so of course to bring their granddaughter and Kevin. Oh, by the way, is going to have to babysit. Oh, too bad.
Yeah,
we figure maybe we'll do, maybe grab breakfast or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get to see her and get the family together. But Yeah, you know, that's what I use it for, is stay in touch with them and a few other folks, you know, but like you say, not a heck of a lot. I mean,
no, I don't. I use Google Plus fairly regularly. I'm on that a lot. I'm actually, Google Plus has something called Hangouts, where it's kind of like Skype, only it's up to 10 people. Well, you and 9 others, right? So I often get, you know, I'll hold office hours for my students. On there, you know, I'll say if you want to, I'll be on the Hangout if you got a question or whatever. And there you go. And that's
well, now with the Android store, for the most part, a lot of them have switched over to Google Play.
Yep.
So you know,
yeah, that's the new name for the market.
Yeah,
yeah.
Matter of fact, I got my stupid phone didn't update.
Really?
For the Google Play. Yeah, and it's like,
See, the problem with all of that is, the problem that Google has is Android is open source, and they just gave it to everybody. So it's really being controlled by the manufacturer of your phone or your carrier.
Yeah, so I'm going to, well, you know, I'm just AT&T, so I'm over here. I'll just go over here to Long Pond and Ridge.
And mention it to them.
And take it in. No, those folks, I got to admit, anytime I've had issues or doing something, bam, they're right there, very helpful. Oh, yeah, we can do this for you. Because I inadvertently, one time when I just got my Android phone, deleted some key icons.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going, how the heck do I get them back?
How the heck did you even delete them?
Well, I just dragged them off the screen.
Oh, yeah.
So this girl, this was on a Sunday.
Yep.
A Sunday afternoon, I called the 800 number, and the girl goes, yeah, we can walk you through that. And she says, you got your phone in front of you? I said, yep. And she showed me where they were in case I lose them again.
Nice.
She goes, there you go. Is there anything else I can do for you? No, that works.
That works.
I won't do that again.
Yep.
I hope.
Yeah, right.
Well, at least one thing, though, with this phone, if you have noticed, no more butt dialing.
I have noticed that.
No more. That other phone of mine, man, that thing loved to butt dial.
My wife's phone butt dials all the time. I told you a couple weeks ago, she called me and there was all this odd noise until I realized, oh, that's right, she's at the dentist. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we continue to be, for no discernible reason, the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Tom from Rochester, New York on Soundbites. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. Just a quick question. I heard you talk about Facebook. Sometimes when I load up a site on the internet, in the bottom left-hand corner, I see it says transferring data and waiting for. And one of the things is facebook.com/plugins.
Yeah.
Is there some, are they like tracking? I'm on Facebook, but I don't know if this is something that.
Well, yes. We've talked about this in the past. Facebook has cookies on your system that can't be erased.
Okay.
Not easily.
Really?
And that are never erased, and that they can get to from any site, from any browser, from anywhere. And if, for example, you were to go, yeah, I know. If, for example, you were to go to the Soundbites website, you would see that we have on the front page a Facebook widget that shows, you know, what's been happening on the Soundbites Facebook webpage. So that's the kind of thing that there is. There's also
the like button.
The like button and the Google. Google has the same thing with their G+, the plus one button. Twitter has the thing where you can tweet a page. So that sort of stuff also comes ultimately from, you know, Google or Facebook or wherever. So that's the other one.
There's a program you can get called Ghostery. And it's a plug-in for Safari, Facebook, or Firefox, and Chrome. I think even IE, too. And it will block all of those tracking things if you want it to.
Okay.
And it's interesting to see, when you go to a website, how many tracking things are on that website.
Yeah. But it also means you then can't plus one something or like something or retweet it
and
immediately.
Ironically, on Ghostery's website, you can Facebook them or Twitter them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And what's how do you spell that name?
Ghostery, G-H-O-S-T-E-R-Y.
Okay.com. All right.
And you get a little ghost icon that shows you how many things have been blocked. And then you can selectively unblock things you want on different websites.
Okay.
So it works in Firefox, Safari, Chrome, Opera, and IE.
Okay. All right. Now, does that, if you don't do it, does that slow things down when you're loading?
It can, because generally speaking, every web page you open has links to dozens or hundreds of other things, usually on the same web server, pictures and articles and logos and whatnot. But with the proliferation of these social networks, it will go to other servers. So it goes to Facebook to pull an icon, goes to Twitter to pull an icon, goes to Google to pull an icon. And that can slow your machine down because
it slows the loading of the web page down.
Right. Slows the loading of the web page down, especially if you're on a slow connection or you're using a slow DNS because it has to look up all of those new domain names. So it can cause types of slowdowns like that.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
There's a couple of interesting DNS benchmark programs out where you can see how fast your DNS is. The DNS is part of the internet that lets you type in Microsoft.com, and then the DNS looks up the numbers that Microsoft really is, because no one can remember all those numbers.
Right, and the reality is the internet runs on numbers. It doesn't know where Microsoft.com is. It only knows, 15.43. Whatever the number is.
Right.
But there's an illustration right there. Nobody remembers the numbers, so the DNS server...
Don't even remember the numbers of my own servers.
Yeah, right.
So there's benchmarking programs. GRC has one that runs under Windows, and then there's one called NameBench from Google Code that runs under several different operating systems. And you can test your DNS servers. You can test public DNS servers from Google and from OpenDNS and from other companies. And oftentimes by putting a different DNS, because typically you use the DNS from your internet provider. So if you're connected to Roadrunner, you're using Roadrunner's DNS, or Frontier uses Frontier's DNS. Oftentimes you can get much faster web page loading by switching to a different DNS provider, which is pretty handy.
Well, what I've done is on my machines both at home and at work, I'm actually using Google's DNS servers.
Yep. 8.8.8.8.
And 8.8.4.4.
That you can remember.
Exactly. And so far, at least, they've been just ridiculously fast. I know if I'm waiting for something, it's not the DNS server at Google.
Right.
So that's been really, really nice. There's also a program on just about a file on just about every operating system I can think of called Host or Hosts. And it is essentially a list of IP address space name.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can add in things that you go to all the time, and then they never wait.
Yep. That's cool.
Then that's actually how the internet started, is every computer on the internet, all five of them, had this file with the IP address of every other computer on the internet.
Right.
And then that got too ungainly to manage, and mm-hmm. DNS was born.
Right. But one of the things that I do is your machine's number is always 127.0.0.1.
Yep.
It's always that. So I have 127.0.0.1, and it's set to localhost and whatever the name of my machine is. Then I have another one where it's set to all the places I don't ever want to go.
Doubleclick.net.
Doubleclick.net is one of the ones I put in there.
Yep.
That essentially now just goes to my machine and immediately comes back and says, error. And so it moves on. I don't ever wait for doubleclick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever wait for any of those other places.
It's saying, are you sure you want to quit this?
Yeah, I don't ever...
What I mean, yep. But usually you get the message, you sure you want to leave this? Hell yeah, get me out of here.
A web page is slow to respond. You want to continue waiting or cancel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got forever.
Yeah, exactly. No, happy to wait. So,
But that's the whole thing, though. I mean, our whole lives have changed so much. And, like I've said, instant gratification.
Isn't fast enough.
Yeah, but yet, like I say, every so often it takes me back to reality when I had a client just this past week, lovely retired nun. I was over at her place setting up, but she uses the computer mainly.
Nuns don't retire, they just get out of the habit.
Oh,
thank you.
Bada bing, try the veal. He's on again at 11, folks. Oh, you're, it, see? There's not me to separate you two.
You're right.
See, he's sucking you in. He is literally sucking you in.
Help me. Help me.
Too late. But anyways, she loves playing her, you know, her games on her computer. And she only goes in for email. And for a few friends, it's the perfect way for her to get it.
Yep.
And she's not in any hurry. She's retired.
Yep.
So you can sit there, start it up. She can go get herself some coffee of that, come back, and they're there, and then go on from that.
Yeah, exactly. Most people don't need all the speed that, you know, our listeners are skewed on the high end, but most people don't need all of that.
What's interesting is the computers are getting faster and faster and faster and faster, you know, running trillions of operations per second, but they still spend most of their time waiting for us to do something.
Exactly.
But when we do something, we want it to come back fast.
Yep. Well, I have to admit that I've used one of the DNS benchmark programs, and that's the reason I use Google's IP, our DNS servers. They just happen to be the fastest I found, even faster than the ones at work and the ones at Frontier and the ones at Time Warner and everybody else. Google's just happened to be ridiculously faster. There's a couple of other places on the net that, at the time at least, were pretty slow for me, although everybody else swears by them. But of the ones I tried...
Sometimes regional. You might find a DNS, you know, that's literally in your city that's significantly faster than any other DNS, if you happen to live in a trunk city.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly right. Somebody just said, what about the ones you ones that run in your own network? Well, I did have the one that ran on their IT network at the time, and it's gotten much faster. But at the time, it was kind of slow. There were some problems with it, and so I just...
So a lot of times, the DNS server computer is either old, sit in the closet because it doesn't need to do much, or they throw the DNS server on top of all the other services, so it doesn't have much horsepower left for the DNS.
Right. Right. And so... Well, and that's the problem is people think, well, it's just DNS. I mean, how much is it going to be used? Well, considerably, because it also doesn't always – I mean, you don't have everything. It goes to other places as well because it doesn't – it can't keep track of every address on the Internet. So it'll often go to someplace else as well, although I think Google's does keep track of every single thing on the Internet. I believe that's
makes true. Makes you wonder.
You aren't kidding. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
Well, I've got a Windows 7 desktop, and I'm discovering that I can't get into certain files. There's a lock on them. First off, I had to go to Tools and then unhide protected operating system files.
Yeah.
Once I did that, some of the files showed that I wanted to get into, for example, the send to menu. Really what I wanted to do was find a startup folder, and I found it once, but now I can't find it again. At any rate, I can't get into it. I have something that runs, it's a program that runs, it's a Post-it Notes, 3M, it's from years and years ago.
Sure.
I wanted to put that in the startup menu so that when I turn the computer on, the Post-it Notes come right up. But at any rate, why are they keeping me from accessing my own computer files?
Well, if you've ever actually read the end-user license agreement, they're not your computer files.
They're Microsoft's.
They're Microsoft computer files, and you're only borrowing them. Read the end. If you've got a few weeks, read the end-user license agreement, the real one.
Okay.
And seriously, I'm actually not kidding. You don't really own that stuff. But the second thing is they're really protecting you from yourself. There's a lot of that stuff you really shouldn't be mucking about with.
In the old days, even with XP, I think, you could go in, you could add things, you could find the startup folder or the send to folder, you could add things, take things out, and...
Well, you still can. You should do it as the administrator, however, not as the regular user is locked out. So you would have to right-click on it and say run as administrator.
I am the administrator, but I didn't think of the right click part. I don't know if that would help me or not.
Yeah, so if you were to, for example, run some sort of editor as the administrator, more things would be open to you. But really, they're, you know, if you screw up your machine, it'll just stop booting.
Yep, and that's why you never hear us talk about getting into the registry.
Yeah, you just don't. I just don't.
A lot of I did post a link from Microsoft on how to get to your startup folder, where its location is. But generally, you can run msconfig to see what's in your startup folder. You can't add things there, though, can you? You can only remove them.
Yeah, I mean, I can go to msconfig and I can delete things or restart them again, but. Shut them off or turn them back on or whatever, but I can't add things. And you said, Steve, you said there's something that you put on
the Soundbites link list. Yeah, it's in C users username app data roaming Microsoft Windows start menu program startup.
All right.
So that's why you can't find it. It's hidden under there.
Yeah,
really
it's,
well.
It's
but
really
I
hidden.
I, you know, I had found it once before, though. I must have inadvertently got to it because
by accident.
Yeah.
I don't see any. I'm the administrator. Do I have to go to safe mode or something?
No,
to do
no.
This?
You can do this right from where Steve is. Is telling you. You just got to know where to find it in that particular folder.
And you do have to turn on hidden folders because they're hidden to prevent people from accidentally deleting them.
Yep.
We get a lot of service calls from people who I don't know what that is. I'll throw it away, and it turns out to be key to the operating system, and things quit working.
So they did it for, you know, protection, and that's a good thing in this case. One of the few things that Microsoft did right.
Well, I will try that with the startup folder. I'm going to do it right now and probably give you guys a call back if I still can't get
in. Well, before you do that, try this. Take the program that you want to put in the start menu.
Mm-hmm.
Right-click on it. And select Send to Desktop, which is really create a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
Once that shortcut's on the desktop, you should be able to drag the shortcut into the startup menu itself.
Okay.
Oddly, Windows seems to prevent people from copying the file in, but not the shortcut.
Yeah, so you could right drag. So if you have both,
maybe that works too.
Yeah, if you have both windows open, the original program window and the startup folder window, if you right drag, when you release the right mouse button, there'll be an option to create shortcut here.
Okay.
Because that's what you want to do anyway. You want to put a shortcut to the program in your startup folder, because if you try to move the actual program .exe file, you'll probably break the program because it needs to be in its own folder with all its own support files.
Yeah, actually, that's actually what I was doing was trying to do the shortcut. I've in the past found that you can't put a .exe file in two different places one program. It causes big
problems.
Yeah,
that would be bad.
Yep.
So, yeah, the theory is you should be able to drag the shortcut in.
I'll give all that a shot. Thanks, guys, for your help.
Yeah, try that first. It's certainly easier.
Yep. So it's the same thing on the Mac side. They ironically they hide the library file for the user, but the system library file is visible, and the system library file is much more dangerous to muck with.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you know what? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly appreciative, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And all the way from Altoona, PA, we have Jason. Welcome, Jason. How are things out there?
Cold and musty.
Yeah, same here.
Snow's coming your way.
Quick question. Well, actually, I've got three things if you guys have time for it.
If you're quick, go for it.
Okay, first one is for the gentleman with the trying to get something into the startup folder. Like you guys said, if you put the shortcut on the desktop, drag it over to the Windows logo in the taskbar, that should pop up the startup menu. Drag it to all programs. Don't let go. Then move it up to all programs. That'll pop up the all programs section. Drag it down to startup, place it in the startup menu that pops up, and it should activate all the...
And then let go.
Yeah.
Then let go.
Yeah. Right.
At that point, it'll drop into the startup, and it'll be ready for him for the next time he reboots.
Yep, good hint. While you were mentioning that, I also remembered if you left-click through the all programs and get to that startup menu folder, if you right-click on the startup folder there, you can say open.
Right.
And then it opens a window, and then you don't have to dig through the subdirectories to find it.
Right.
That's a good one to put a shortcut. Once you do have it, create a shortcut there, put it on your desktop, and then move that into another subfolder that, you know, you store stuff.
Although we were mentioning during the break, most people want to get things out of their startup menu to make the machine boot faster.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. But if they create a shortcut, and you've got a folder of My Stuff, and you put that shortcut in the folder of My Stuff, that you can just click open it and periodically check to see what is in your startup, so you can... once in a while, clean it out if you don't want. Because programs have a very nasty habit of assuming that you want them always to install in the startup.
Yeah, right.
Or they have that little starter application that makes them start up faster.
Right. Like Microsoft Office does and everybody else. What's your second question?
Second one is for my wife's laptop. You know that sound when you get a real cheap CD that is kind of off balance? You know, somebody forgot to balance it laptop CPU fan is making the same sound. Can that be solved by just blowing it clean with compressed air, or does that mean the bearings on the fan are gone?
Sometimes blowing it out works. Sometimes I've also seen it's one of the wires has moved in and it's touching a fan blade.
Yep, that could be. I mean, if you can get at it and see it, some of them you can actually, if you're going to put in memory and that type of stuff, depending on the design of them, you can actually see the fan to get pull the cover off on the bottom, depending on how adept you are and working on laptops, and get in there and blow it out. But quite often, for the most part, on laptops, those are a sealed unit.
Yeah.
So 10 to 1 odds, if it's making the noise, blowing it out doesn't do it, you might have to order another fan.
Okay, and take it to somebody that can replace it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and the third one is for me. I was normally have a wireless network here in my house, WPA2 encryption, but... in January, I totaled my car, so I'm off on short-term disability. So in order to save expenses while I'm on unemployment, we cut our broadband internet access. The trouble is the wireless router I have wants that IP address from my wireless or from my internet provider before it'll create a stable wireless network in my house. If it doesn't get the IP address from, in my case, Comcast, it'll actually shut down the SSID and nothing can connect to the wireless network in the house.
Weird. I've seen usually when routers can't get an IP from the upstream ISP, they usually create their own network. You just can't get to the internet.
Right.
Do you have the option in your router to tell it you've got a static IP from your ISP instead of DHCP?
It's a Linksys RT54G, so
yeah,
I believe so.
You should, So just tell it it's a static IP and make one up, 192.168.2.1, or
okay,
just
so
some
that,
different
that
IP.
That would allow it to trick into, because what I'm looking for is the wireless network so that I can share files between all my equipment here in my house.
And a lot of times you can even turn off
External access,
yeah. And
that's
just,
really where you want to be.
Just turn it into access point only and not a router. That option might even be in there, too.
All right, I'll look for that.
That's really the way you want to go, because that just says ignore anything from outside, which there isn't anything, so you win, and just become an internal network of your own, and that's the way you want to do it.
All right. Thank you very much for that help.
Sure.
And I want to apologize for not becoming a member this drive. Like I said, I'm unemployed at this time, but I'll definitely save my pennies for the fall drive. So,
all right, we'll take you up on that come fall. Thanks a lot, and get better.
I will. Thanks.
And congratulations on asking your wife's question first. you'll be able to sleep with both eyes closed tonight.
Man.
Well done, you.
Well, when she finally hears the podcast next week or whenever it does get uploaded, I will definitely let her know that you guys appreciated that.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. The startup menu, what a pain it can be. Although...
On the Mac, you right-click an icon in the dock and say, open it, login.
Yeah.
And then if you don't want it to, you uncheck, open it, login.
Yeah. That's easy enough to do.
Yeah.
And some of the GUIs on Linux do the same thing, but it's Windows tries to make life easier for people, and therefore for people who know what they're doing, it makes life harder.
Wait until they see Windows 8. That'll really pork them off.
That's
a train wreck happening. I mean, I've been playing with Windows 8, and I'm used to a tablet.
Right.
And my Android phone. But, I mean, the folks that have just gone from Windows XP over to Windows 7, that was a big enough shift. Now to make all this other stuff disappear, and it is a totally, it's like going to learn the Mac.
Completely different than what
you're used to.
And that's always been an issue with Windows. Especially for tech people, they move things around. Where did they put control panels?
Yeah, but the thing that is, though, is going from Windows 3.1 to 3.1.1 to Windows XP to Windows Windows 2000, Windows 7. All those, they still had the standard look as far as your desktop. There's the taskbar. Down in the lower left-hand corner is your start button, which brings up the menus, and over on the right-hand side, you can see what's going in the taskbar, what's running.
Yeah.
Windows 8, folks, forget it. It ain't there. You ain't going to see it.
It's the tablet interface, which is something I really want on my tablet, and I don't really want on my desktop.
Exactly. But they should give them the option. They got to implement, do I want the tablet look or the standard Windows look?
Yeah.
Because otherwise they are going to hit.
Microsoft knows what you need better than you know what you need. So stop fighting it.
Stay with Windows 7, folks. If you're not there yet.
Eventually you're going to have to move.
But the thing of it is, though, if you're on XP, before Windows 8 comes out and they change something drastically, I'd say go for a Windows 7 machine.
Yeah, go for it now.
Yeah, go for it now because, I think it's later in September Windows 8 is due out.
Yeah.
So you got between now and September, and probably maybe a month later, because they're going to be flooding it for the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm.
Hate to be talking about that right now. But, get it now while you can.
Yep. All right, I think we've got time.
Yeah.
All right, we got time to talk to Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
How you doing, guys? I miss you all.
Well, we miss you too. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great.
Good.
Good to hear your voices. Listen, I have some information that's going to alert and alarm some Mac users.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. As you know, I'm very conscientious about keeping the Macs clean. I've always run the antivirus software, the Clam XAV.
Right.
But I have found it have been using another program, Sophos, S-O-P-H-O-S.
Yep. Oh, yeah, good one.
A different antivirus.
And free.
I happen to be using the activity monitor, which shows all the threads that are running in the computer. And I saw that there was a chunk of code from Sophos that was running as root.
Yep.
And I never gave it permission to do that.
Yep.
So I no sooner saw it, there wasn't time to make a cup of coffee before it was completely off my computer.
Yep.
Yeah, it was probably
runs
in
as root that I don't say runs as root.
Yeah, it was probably in that license screen on the install. Yeah.
Well, the real problem is that in general, any antivirus program has to have root privileges to move to do quarantine stuff or erase stuff on some files.
Clam XAV doesn't.
Well, right. I don't think it does. But you're right. It's probably somewhere in the EULA that you agreed to somewhere.
Well, I'm one that reads EULAs, and it wasn't in there.
Interesting. Yeah, you are the person who reads.
Because I would never have said, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Good piece of information. Thank you. We'll be staying away from Sophos then.
At least on the Macs. I don't know. I'm not talking about any of the other platforms.
Right. All right. Well, those of you who are using it can check the activity monitor and find out what's going on.
Exactly. So you might talk a bit about the danger of running root if you have time.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay. Talk to you later, guys. Bye-bye.
Yep. Have fun. Thanks. Friend of the show, Chris Wright. Nice guy. Here's the thing. Root is something you should never run it. And that's administrator on a Windows machine or root on a Linux machine or a Mac machine. You don't want to run as the administrator because we're human. We make mistakes. You do something dumb, and the thing pops up and says, you can't do that, and that's great, unless you're the administrator, when it says, okay, and does it anyway, and then your machine can't boot. That's why I try to discourage people from running as administrator as much as mm-hmm. possible. You only want to run administrator when you're adding or removing programs, updating, stuff like that. If Sophos actually runs as root without permission, that's sneaky, and I don't go for it myself. Chris is right. You don't want to do that. However, if you only you can decide if that's okay with you. The problem is if it runs as root and some other malicious program takes it over, there's a real problem there, because now it's running as the root, as a root privileged system. It can do anything in your machine at all, absolutely anything. So my suggestion is you don't want to run anything as root if you don't have to. You really don't have to. If you don't have to, don't, because it's a bad idea. Now, some things will run as root automatically. Some pieces of the operating system have to run as root. Otherwise, they don't function. Yeah, you live with what you got to live with. But most everything should run as non-root.
I have a process where the user is nobody.
Yep. Nobody is another specialized account that theoretically has no privileges whatsoever outside the one thing it's doing.
It's called warm. It's a warm demon.
Okay.
Maybe that's because my temperatures are warm.
Oh. And so it starts up? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe.
It only exists under certain
conditions.
My CPU is running at 167 to 171 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow. My CPU is actually running at 72 degrees Fahrenheit. And my hard drive, my SDA, is running 113 degrees Fahrenheit.
I've got the video stream running. I've got the audio recording.
Yeah, right.
Running.
You're doing a lot of things. Stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just barely.
So let's go over to Google and see what Warm Demon does.
Well, that's what I'm hoping Rob can get the wireless going. Because even though I got, four monitors here, three keyboards, three mice, I don't have actually a computer.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have any real access.
And a tablet, now that I finally got it.
You should tell us about your tablet.
Oh,
I don't know if you have time here.
Yeah,
but
for right now, though, I mean, it'd be nice to have that, the wireless, but, got to remind the boss.
It is what it is.
He just got back,
Yeah.
Probably all suntanned and...
Relax. He's like, I don't really care about your wireless problem right now.
He's still on vacation.
That's exactly right. Well, it's 24/7 for him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. But there's you can run the process monitor, the activity monitor, whatever you're going to call it, on almost any machine. Task Manager has one. So if you right click on the button bar across the bottom of Windows, one of the choices is Task Manager, and you can see one of the tabs lets you see all the processes. Most of them, you don't know what they're doing, so don't muck about with them. Just don't. But you can see that there are some things that must run as root. They absolutely must, because they're part of the operating system, and you don't get a choice with that.
And some folks will still play.
And I'm telling you right now, if you do that and your machine then fails to boot ever again, don't call us, and we won't call you.
Well, they can call me, and then, do business. They can call me.
Well, that's right. They can call you or Steve for your business, and because that's what you do for a living, and you'll charge them an appropriate amount of money because you have to make a living, too. Listen, we're done for the first hour. We're going to come back and do a whole nother hour of this because we're gluttons for punishment, and apparently so are you. So we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you can give us a call, and join in the fun, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and you can join us online as we talk a lot more about computers and any other dang thing we feel like it on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the very appreciative, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. 5 years ago, some of the most powerful players in television banded together to introduce Hulu, a streaming service intended to revolutionize the TV industry. This week, Hulu looks more like a traditional network than an internet pioneer. At a presentation on Thursday in New York, Hulu, created as a service for watching network television online, will pitch advertisers on original programming in an annual ritual known as upfronts that are typically reserved for cable channels and network broadcasters. Hulu executives, upfronts basically, you go in and you say, here are the shows that we want to produce, who wants to buy them? And enough people say we want to buy them, enough people, one station says we want to buy them, then they own that show. And, you know, there'll be 150, 200 upfronts, and about three of them get on any one channel. You know?
And so, that's gotten a lot better since we've gotten more and more channels.
Right. Well, yes, what it means is that marginal upfronts get turned into television series. At a presentation on Thursday in New York, Hulu executives are expected to take the stage to sell advertisers on new series. The executives will also promote the service's desirable demographic of young viewers who turn to Hulu for popular network sitcoms like New Girl and Family Guy, available only after they are broadcast on Fox. But they are available immediately after they are broadcast on Fox. As an online television destination, Hulu is something of a teenager itself now, sometimes tolerating feuding parents and succeeding perhaps in spite of them. Hulu is growing steadily despite disagreements among its corporate owners and the new restrictions those owners have placed on free streaming of network shows. This week, Hulu will announce that it has topped 2 million subscribers for its $8 a month Hulu Plus service in the first quarter, half a million more than it had at the end of 2011. But it has not been an easy path to growth. The executives who were the greatest champions of Hulu at its inception, Jeff Zucker, the former chief, no relation to Zuckerberg, the former chief executive of NBC Universal, Peter Chernin, formerly chief operating officer at News Corporation, have both moved on. Their successors are less enamored with the service, which they view as a potential threat to traditional stream revenues because they're idiots. Hulu's owners are Walt Disney Company, the News Corporation's Fox Broadcasting Unit, Comcast NBC Universal Unit, yes, Comcast owns NBC Universal, and Providence Equity Partners. In 2007, when internet television viewing began to take off in earnest, Hulu's corporate parents raced to create a legal TV streaming service supported by advertising, but more recently, those corporate parents have struck multi-billion-dollar streaming deals with cable and satellite operators to make shows available online to their subscribers with tablets or smartphones. So our question to you, what's your favorite show on Hulu? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And we won't ask you to pledge.
And we won't.
Because thanks to you folks, we made it.
Yep.
One of the interesting things about both Hulu and Netflix, one of the other internet streaming video services, is they've both started doing original productions, just like any other network.
Yep.
Was it Arrested Development, which got canceled on a network, is being picked up for new episodes on one of them. I forget which.
Yeah.
We used to see that with the big three, NBC, CBS, ABC. A program would get canceled, and that would end up as a new series on, you know, USA Network or Sci-Fi Channel or one of the other, you know, higher numbers.
Right.
And now we're starting to see original productions on the internet. In fact, a lot of times TV shows like this will get made into a pilot, and then a network will decide if they want to continue with the show. And there's a lot of canceled pilots out there that, never get aired. Sci-Fi Channel ran a couple of canceled pilots for shows that were interesting. One was about a group of, mismatched superheroes, and the lead character was telekinetic, but he could only move things 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And Sci-Fi Channel turned down that show so they could produce Alphas, about another band of superheroes with their own powers. But we see a lot of times that these failed pilots have ended up on iTunes or on Netflix or on Hulu. And even when a show is canceled and they still have episodes in the can that were never aired, they'll show up on the internet, you know, officially from the producers before they end up in the DVD box set. And a lot of times we see pilots like that run on the internet first to gauge audience reaction. And then they'll make the show if enough
Sanctuary
people in the audience.
Sanctuary did that. It ran for a season as a web-only.
Yeah.
It was webisodes, they call them.
Yeah.
And that became the TV series. Felicia Day is doing that with like about 30 different series at once.
Yep.
There's a hard-working woman. A bunch of stuff that runs on internet only.
It used to be that you would do an internet show like that so you could get picked up by a real network.
Right.
And now these internet shows are real networks.
Yep.
It's really changed the way younger people, which is the demographic everybody wants, the hell with us older folks.
Because they have all the money.
No, they don't.
They get it from us.
They get it from us.
We have wives and children, so we can't spend money on ourselves.
That's exactly right. That's where the younger folks are getting their entertainment now. They get it from the internet. You know, when a cat playing the piano gets 100 gazillion views on YouTube, advertisers and other producers of content sit up and take notice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, that's the way that works.
There was a really cute episode of South Park where the boys put together an internet video and then went to the internet to get their money. And they had the 5 or 6 other internet memes at the time there, the people guest starring. What was the kid that moves away from the microphone when he breathes but has a great singing voice?
Great voice, yeah. Yep.
And so they had all these other internet memes.
What does he call himself? The chocolate something? Forget what it is.
All these other internet memes were there in this giant room, you know, asking the internet, okay, where's our money?
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, it's becoming a thing now. People get entertainment from the internet. We have hundreds of people who download our podcast mm-hmm. every week. People from all over the world who can't get this station
right
on the air. They can listen online.
Rain.
Yeah.
Chocolate Rain, that's him. They can listen online, but having the podcast means, you know, when you're out jogging or whatever it is you do for yourself, you can listen to the show.
Yep.
That's an interesting point. And the upfronts have become, equally important, because who they're really pitching to are the advertising agencies, to the advertisers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I want your, I don't know, peanut butter company to sponsor my TV show or my internet thing, right? I mean, it doesn't matter. If you want to advertise your peanut butter to 100 million 6-year-olds who are spending their day on Hulu, here's how you do it. You know, there's a market for that. You know, we talk about how much better television was back in the 50s. Well, the reason it was better is because there were only 3 networks, and they picked the best shows.
I remember sign-off times at night.
I remember sign-off
times. Seeing those test patterns.
One of my earliest memories is waiting for the Indian to do something.
Play the national anthem.
I did not understand at that age. I was, 20? that the Indian didn't do anything. He was just there all night long.
Yeah.
And I remember the Indian, watching the Indian in the morning as well, waiting for Captain Kangaroo to come on.
Yeah, wait for that second, and all then boom.
Yep.
And then kick in and turn the switch on, and yay, my day's complete.
Yep. And at the end of the day, the national anthem. before they signed off. Absolutely. Yep.
Jack Horkheimer. I always would watch him at the end. What is that? Yep. Channel 21 used to run him.
Yep.
The star,
I love Jack Horkheimer.
Star Hustler. Did the thing of what's happening in the sky tonight, and yeah, sign off, keep looking up.
Yep, I loved
now,
that show.
Neil Tyson signs off his podcast now the same way.
Nice. Hmm. But see, now it's all different. Now it's a podcast.
Yeah.
Now you have to go out and seek it. That's one of the interesting things about this. Where do you find great podcasts?
There's podcast trackers, but there's so many podcasts. It's back to word of mouth.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to really get that.
What was that one? Rob was Q Air? Was it? They was recommending, you know, some of our shows could go over to it.
Oh, Dar.fm.
Dar.fm.
Digital audio recording,
which has no Q in it.
I don't know why I was thinking Q.
Well, there's a program for your phone, and I can't remember the name of it offhand, where you can, from your phone, create a podcast just by hitting the button. And it goes up to whatever their server is and is saved and becomes a podcast, and you can send it on. And it's a video podcast. I mean, it's a video cast, whatever stupid portmanteau you're going to make out of that. But the point is, you don't even need equipment anymore.
Right.
You know, you could sit in a room with three guys like us, set up a phone in the middle of the desk, start this thing, and talk for a couple hours every Friday, and it'll go out and become a podcast.
Are we on Dar?
I don't know.
I'm looking.
Okay.
But that's the kind of thing that I think we are. That's the kind of thing that is making the internet problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to a number of other podcasts of technical shows and comedy shows and all kinds of other things, and many of them just are not professionally produced. They don't sound right.
Well, and that was sort of the same thing that happened in the early days of desktop publishing, as you put 127 fonts on one page, and it worked its way out. And now we're seeing that. It used to be millions of dollars for a studio, and now, you know, with your $500 computer or your cell phone, you can actually do podcasting. And the biggest tip for anyone looking into podcasting is get a good mic. You know, these Sennheiser mics we're using now are probably $500.
Yep.
They sound really, really good.
Yep. Yep.
Don't watch that we don't pop our peas.
Don't use the ambient mic built into your computer.
Right.
Sounds like a bad speakerphone.
Right. Right. And picks up fan noise.
Yep.
Oh, wait a minute. You were talking earlier.
I never was.
Talking about just mics and good equipment, about wireless headsets.
Yeah, I picked up a wireless headset. I can look it up. So really, fairly, I have to admit, I didn't know whether I would like it or whatever.
Explain it to the group.
Yeah, here's the deal. You normally, if you're going to be listening to music or whatever from your phone or from your computer or wherever, you're going to want headsets. The thing that makes me a little nuts is being tethered to it by a physical wire. I can't get up and walk around very far. Yeah. Or if I want to move the machine I'm using out of the way to do something else, I can't do it. This is a Bluetooth headset. It connects directly to the Bluetooth in your laptop or your phone, or you can add Bluetooth to your desktop with a USB thing. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you're instead of being tethered to it by a cable, you're now just free to walk around and do whatever you want within 33 feet, I believe it is.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And so I went on Newegg, and I picked up it was $35, but it was a Bluetooth headset. And it was really and I thought, well, all right, it's going to be cheap. I get that. But it had a microphone in it, so maybe I'll use it for Second Life tomorrow night.
That'd be cool in this studio if we had...
Well, but now you got to have something to plug it into. I mean, you can't do that
with one of the computers, you know what I mean?
Bluetooth receiver in the computer and then pipe that through the audio system,
Yeah, by the time you're done with that,
I know.
But it was a Bluetooth headset and...
Well, if we get... Yeah, a microphone with an XLR at the other end, and you plug that into the board.
Yeah.
And,
right. It could be done, but, not going to happen now. But, no, just so not tethered to the board, like you say, right now, you walk away, at times, and I've done this at night on Thursday nights because I don't use this headset, I use another one. my IFB so I can, you know, be talking on the phone and that type of stuff. But and I walk away, and like my big fat Greek wedding, when she gets up to leave her desk, I get yanked back and just about onto the floor.
Yeah, this thing was $35.
Was
bucks.
It stereo, two speakers? Or just one?
No, it's stereo.
Nice. And you said it wasn't one of the name brands, because at our store we've got some of the Blue Ant and Motorola and LG, Plantronics, you know, the big name brands.
Look, but I got it for over. I had a coupon for free overnight shipping, and I thought, well, what the heck, you know, why not? But it was. I'm narrowing it in. I'm in the $24 range right now. So another couple of clicks, and I should be there.
Usually really, Bluetooth stuff is expensive.
Yeah, it really is. And I just thought, well, if it's not
Like
it's
everything
not
else, you know, it's getting made.
GT Max for $15.99?
No, I went higher than that. I did go into
just
the...
That's just a single earpiece.
Yeah. This was and that would be useful in the car, actually. And I thought about that as well. But this was $35. It was a nice headset. I really liked it. I'll look for it during the break and... And we'll talk about it when we come back from the break. Speaking of breaks, there's a coincidence. We're going to have one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Dave, Steve, Nick, you. Sound bites on the very, very appreciative member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yeah, I found my headset. It was actually $29.95, $6 shipping, brought it up to $35. 20 hours of music time, 400 hours of standby time. It folds up into a little case. It's got a microphone. It's really nice. The problem is and I have this with so many things, it's not adjustable.
Oh.
So for most people, it would fit fine. But I I'm ashamed to say this because I'm a...
You're unique.
Back 100 million years, I'm Italian. But somewhere, and we know this, somewhere in the woodpile back then is a Scotsman, and I have a Celtic skull. So stuff that goes behind the hat, if I have to fit it, it's too wide. And it doesn't fit as nicely as I'd like it to.
A Celtic skull with a solar panel.
Exactly. Exactly.
We were just talking about that yesterday with my boss, who's Italian, you know, many generations back.
Yeah.
And related to Nick through the marriage of her German husband.
Right. My wife is German.
She's fair-skinned and burns very easily.
Yeah.
Which is a little unusual for Italians.
Me too.
You know, in that Mediterranean sun.
Oh, Jesus.
Me too. All right. This is a great news story. The long-awaited Google Drive, a cloud-based file locker, is expected to launch next week after months of rumors. A report in the Next Web, based on a leaked document provided by someone claiming to be a Google Drive partner, says that the service will be available for mobile, Mac, and PC. It doesn't say Linux, which kind of bothers me. The report also notes the service will start giving all users 5 gigabytes of storage for free. That would be a definite blow to Dropbox, which is still the leading service in legitimate cloud storage. Dropbox users get 2 gigabytes of storage for free and then can pay either $10 or $20 a month to upgrade to 50 or 100 gigabytes of storage. Google is also matching the free 5-gigabyte offerings from the companies Box.net and SugarSync, which too many people have not heard of. Like other cloud services, Google Drive appears to be set up to allow users to make edits to a document in one device and have all those changes update everywhere else. A previous Next Web report tipped that the Google Drive app would allow for editing via mobile app. These are some of the strongest indications so far that Google Drive is set to go after several false starts. As GigaOm points out, rumors about the service first popped up in 2006 and have picked up steam 4 times since then. The latest round of speculation was prompted by a Wall Street Journal report in February that said to expect the product in weeks or months. So what do you think about Google Drive? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. 65.
That CIDR, the Apple CIDR users group, we're looking at some sort of a internet disk because the Mobile Me service is shutting down, and we got a story coming up about that later. We've been using Dropbox for a while, but again, it's 2 gigabytes for free. Although you can get up to 16 gigabytes for free if you refer enough friends and they sign up.
Yeah,
too.
Right.
But Microsoft SkyDrive gives you 25 gigabytes for free.
Yep.
But we just can't get ourselves to use Microsoft SkyDrive at the Apple CIDR group.
Well, no, that's the whole problem, though, with just staying on your point for a moment. Microsoft is notorious for starting something up.
And killing
it. And if it doesn't turn a profit for them, then they say, oh, sorry, we're doing away with it.
The one thing I really like about Dropbox is it's a folder on your computer. So it has a computer interface. You don't have to use the web for it, which is handy if you're doing large file transfers, because you just drag a folder into there and it doesn't have to go through the web.
Well, I just did a little batch file that, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. It backs up all the current files that I want and puts them up into the Dropbox.
Right.
And then Dropbox it's up there.
Yep.
The
problem I have with Dropbox is the complete and utter lack of any sort of security. But
it's encrypted at their end and they have the keys.
Right.
And they had a bug earlier.
Right.
Where the encryption got turned off accidentally for a few hours on a Sunday, so anyone could get to anybody's Dropbox.
Yep.
So that's the nice thing about some of the other services. Is it Mosey, I think it was, encrypts it on your computer before it sends it up.
Right.
And there's another service I just read that's coming, I can't remember the name of it, any folder on your computer can become synced to the internet. With Dropbox, it's only a single Dropbox folder.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And this new service lets you do any folder.
But the key thing, Google jumping on board right now. Because, like I said, you watch this coming school season, come September, and for the Christmas season, I think you're going to see tablets take off even more.
Yeah.
And now with the Google doing their own cloud computing, I mean, kids can be anywhere on campus or anything else, and they can get at their documents. They don't have to be worried about, it's on my big laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, a netbook. The tablet you carry that around is so darn thin.
And especially with the limited storage most tablets have, 16, 32 gigs of storage.
Well, and so many places now, I use Google Docs, and I'm going to hear about this in the IRC chat again. I use Google Docs, but there's Zoho, and there's Microsoft Windows Live, and there's a whole bunch of other things where you can keep your stuff online. I do 90% of my documents now online because I can edit them from anywhere on any device. If I really think of something I've got to do right now, I can do it from my phone if I have to.
Well, now that I got the tablet, that's what I'm liking about that is, for the most part,
there it is.
I've got 16 gig in my tablet. I just ordered another 32 gig so I can put pictures and a lot of my music.
Right.
That I can put in there and a lot of photos. You know, I like to carry the photos with me and that type of stuff. But just other programs and just being able to get to, say, a quote or that.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm at a client, I don't have to worry about it. I can just pull it up and say, all right, here's what we're going to do. And they make any adjustments. I can make it right then and there and do it on the fly.
Yep. So just, if Google Drive, for example, has an app. Dropbox has an app, but again, I don't know about Dropbox in terms of their security.
No.
And Google, everybody says, are you kidding? Google owns all your data, but whatever. Whichever one you use, you can put all your quotes up in there. You can, make them PDFs and put them all up in there, and life becomes a little bit easier for walking around and having stuff.
Yeah, the one I was thinking of earlier is Cubby, which is a new service coming from LogMeIn. Unlimited storage.
That makes me suspicious.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
How do they afford that?
Exactly. How do they afford that?
Yeah. I just tweaked out our recent caller.
Yes.
Because I mentioned his, when I picked up the phone, I said, hello. And I mentioned his name. He goes, wait a minute. How'd you know it was me? Well, I was going to lead him on and just say, I'm good.
It's magic.
Over all these years, I finally, I just can sense it, but, you know, it's caller ID.
It is caller ID. All right, our next caller is George from Greece. Welcome, George. What's up?
Hi. You were talking earlier about Bluetooth, and you kind of described the system that does the transmission and the earbud or the headset.
Right.
Can you help me on the other end? You said it plugs into a computer.
Yep.
What exactly plugs into the computer, and what other sources of sound can you actually access?
Well, it depends on the computer.
Some computers have Bluetooth built into them and don't need to plug anything in.
Most laptops have it built in. Most tablets have it built in. Most phones have it built in. So all you have to do then is turn it on.
Recent model in the last
Recent
year or
Recent
so.
Models, right, yeah. in the last few years. And then so all you have to do is turn it on. If it doesn't have it built in, you can buy a USB dongle. It looks like a really, really, really teeny USB drive, very short.
You call it a dongle?
Well, they call it a dongle. It's essentially a USB drive. But it's very, very, very short.
It dangles off the end of your computer, so we call them dongles.
Right.
I forget how long ago that name started.
Well, because it used to be big, long cables.
But that's
what you would plug in, and then it depends. So, for example, on my netbook or on my laptop or on my MacBook Pro or on my tablet or on my whatever, not any of these things are mine, but you know what I mean, that already have Bluetooth built in, usually on the menu you can say, for example, on the MacBook Pro, or the MacBook Air that I've got at work, I see the little Bluetooth thing lights up, I can pull it down, it says, oh, there's your P311. And I click on it, and it says, do you want to use this as your audio device? I say yes, and all the audio goes through it.
Which you can usually set in a system preference or control panel.
Right, as
which
to how
audio,
much audio.
Right. Now, usually Bluetooth devices are more expensive than other wireless devices. Like keyboard and mice, you know, a Bluetooth mouse is often in the $60, $70 range.
Okay.
But an RF mouse is in the $30, $40 range.
Yes.
Because it has that little dongle that plugs into USB, it's a little bit cheaper than the Bluetooth chipsets. But often Bluetooth is more convenient. If you have Bluetooth in your computer, you don't need to plug that USB thing in, and so you free a USB port.
Right.
Okay. Now, I associate it with a computer and with phone service, cell phones. Can I get access into audio from TV broadcast or TV cable?
That's an entirely different setup. If you have Bluetooth capability in whatever device is receiving those signals, then yes.
There are also Bluetooth transmitters that will plug into, say, a headphone jack. So you plug it into the headphone jack on your television or stereo or you know MP3 player, and it creates that Bluetooth signal that then pairs. You know, pairing is the technical term Bluetooth uses for getting the transmitter and the receiver to talk to each other.
Okay, Steve, I think you're on the track that I'm most interested in. These little transmitters. What is the proper name that I would ask for, either online or in a store?
I would suggest you ask for a Bluetooth headset with transmitter.
That plugs into a headphone jack.
That plugs into a headphone jack. I mean, a lot of TVs nowadays have a regular headphone jack in them.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is this little transmitter plugs into that, and then you pair your headphone with it, and you're on your way. You know, when that's plugged in, everybody else stops hearing the sound, and it only comes to the Bluetooth headset.
A lot of times you see ads for things like that to let you watch TV at night without disturbing the partner in bed.
Right.
Like the light wouldn't disturb them, but the audio would.
Right. Well, I actually bought one. We have the TV is out in the upstairs hall, which is big enough for a giant Lazy Boy couch and a huge TV and stereo center and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bookcases. But it's the upstairs hall and two end tables. So years ago, I bought a regular RF headset that did exactly the same thing, so that if my wife wanted to go to bed early and I wanted to stay up late, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, that's beginning to be replaced by Bluetooth.
I used to get really long headphone cables.
Yes, of course you do.
In the early days.
It's nice to be able to get up and walk around. Yesterday, I was listening to music all day. As I was working, I could get up and walk around my office and get stuff. When I was done with lunch, I took it out to the garbage in the hallway, and I could still hear because it's 33 feet, actually.
That's a good distance, though.
Yeah. It's not a problem. Bluetooth headsets right now are fairly expensive. They're coming down. Like I said, mine were $30, and they've got a decent sound, except they don't fit. If you've got a Celtic skull, it might not be the headset for you.
Well, actually, you this conversation has wandered exactly to where I was most interested, and that is to be able to listen to it in bed. But the difficulty with the RF headphones are, at least the ones I've seen, are very large and bulky. They're not well suited for, laying against the pillow.
Well, and the other thing about Bluetooth is if you take a look around, and again, these start to get expensive again, but you can have the kind that are just sort of earbuds with a link behind them
to
go behind your head.
And
those kind of things are there. There's going to be a little bulk in it because there's got to be a battery and a transmitter, or rather a receiver. There's going to be a little bulk somewhere in there, but generally it would be like a kind of an anaconda that had eaten a pig. I mean, the middle of it is a little bit of bulk in the back, right?
We generally call those the in-ear, and then there's the over-the-ear.
Right.
And then there's the
behind
surrounding
the ear.
Right.
And but all of these are a lot smaller than the big ear cups that we associate with our...
Right. The ones I've got
the ones
have
we're
cans.
Wearing now.
Right.
Yeah, like the set of cans. Yeah. That's what they are.
Those are the ones I got because they were only $30. When you start talking about the ones you want, you're in the $60, $70, $80 range. And I just didn't want to spend that much.
Well, I understand that you're cheap about that.
I'm a cheap guy.
But actually, the RF headsets are in that same price range, so there's no price disadvantage here.
Well, right. And the big thing for me, of course, was all the devices I want to plug it into already have Bluetooth.
That's something that I'm not situated with. So,
right.
This has been helpful.
As I'm Googling around, I'm seeing a Bluetooth bridge. Is sometimes called that you plug into your headphone jack and it creates the Bluetooth signal for you.
All right, we're going to take a break. Got to be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites on the very appreciative, member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. All right, I have to say, we've had a slight nerdgasm here. It appears that in May, a comic book series will come out that features a Doctor Who Star Trek crossover.
Huh?
Exactly. I don't care. I'm going to buy them. I'm going to have to call. I haven't bought a comic book, and I can't tell you how many years. But this is just nerdy enough that I will be there. There's no question of that. I will be there.
Well, the new movie coming out though with all the superheroes, I definitely want to see that.
Yeah,
one.
The Avengers.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the local theaters is doing a marathon: Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America. All leading up to a midnight showing of the Avengers.
That sounds like Friday night to me.
Yep. It's probably Thursday night and opens Friday
morning.
Yeah,
it would be.
I think it was only $35 for all the movies, yeah. That's a long time to sit in a movie theater. I think our record once is six. We spent all week on doing six movies in a row.
When
I was young and the irony is if I have more padding on my butt, but it hurts longer.
Right. Back in the day when we were in college, we went to a drive-in theater to watch all four of the Hang 'em High, of the Clint Eastwood Man with No Name series. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, A Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and Hang 'em High. Four movies. And that was in the day when movies were 2.5 hours long.
Yep.
So it started at sunset and it ended at dawn, and we went in a Nash Rambler, which I don't know if any of you people know what a Nash Rambler is. But it used to be called, and I apologize for my language, the Rolling Whorehouse, because the entire front bench seat folded all the way back, so you had a single level surface all the way to the back seat. So we all sat in a row with our feet out watching this these movies all night long. We had the best time. We just had the best time. All right, our next caller is Chris from what may or may not be Canandaigua. Is that what that is?
Yep.
Okay, all right.
Next.
Chris, welcome. What's your question?
Nick, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I'm going to ask my question and then or tell you what I have to say, and then I'll hang up and listen. We have a poor connection on my end.
Oh, all right.
Steve Gibson on his Security Now podcast, your old buddy, this past week did all the cloud storage services, and it's the best thing I ever heard explaining them all.
Oh, nice.
And he does the... he does all the top, basically the top 10, and he explains why, and it all makes sense.
Oh, and I haven't listened to it yet. I download it every week. I just haven't gotten to the latest one.
Well, he was, normally it's a Wednesday, and he was on Thursday this week, so it's a day late.
Oh, all right.
And my wife asked me a question. She's not a techie, but I'm thinking back to the days that when you guys were on... our news, and I think you clued this, you clued me into Open Office back then.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I use Mac, so I have NeoOffice.
Yep.
And she said, why does anybody buy Microsoft Office?
Well,
inertia.
I didn't have a good answer for her.
Inertia seems to be the best answer.
Well, there's a couple of reasons, honestly. Some people don't trust free. They think it can't be as good as something you pay for.
Yeah.
You generally, when you buy Windows, you get a trial version of Microsoft Office. So the inertia that Steve is talking about brings you to that. And there are people who just simply don't know about it.
Some of it also we've seen is the helplines. If you buy something, you typically get customer help. You're able to call somebody and ask questions. But more and more, we're seeing that going to internet forums.
Right.
Where, with OpenOffice and NeoOffice and pretty much any program.
LibreOffice.
LibreOffice. You go to their website, and there's forums that you ask questions for.
Right.
And so nobody has telephone tech support much anymore.
Yeah, nobody does. Well, and you don't really get free tech support from Microsoft anymore either. Certainly not much of it.
Yeah. Apple does what they call up and running tech support. You get 90 days of free support when you buy a computer. But if you buy the AppleCare protection plan, the extended warranty, then you get 3 years of telephone support. So we're seeing a lot of companies are doing that. You pay $35, $45 per incident now.
I tell you what you don't ever get an answer from is the people at iTunes who reimburse tax to tax-free organizations. I've been waiting forever for that. My dean is getting a little porked off about it. But Apple is just not answering me. I mean, they've got an address to write to, a specific one for getting your tax back.
Right.
I just can't get an answer from that.
They're like the government. They want to hold on to it as long as they can. They'll make money.
Well, I don't care how long they hold on to it. I just need somebody to call me back and say, we understand you have a problem. Let's solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say it'll take you 6 months to cut a check. Okay, but respond to me a little bit.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing. So, yeah. That's that. Sorry, Chris, you're still there?
Yeah, it's okay.
But Microsoft Office is certainly not a bad product. It just is. It's not cheap.
It's a lot cheaper than it used to be. The standard home version is now $120. It used to be $500.
Right. And now they've got versions where you can put it on multiple machines and et cetera, et cetera. So they're certainly getting better, but it's still not as cheap as free.
Right.
No, I think I heard that they were trying to get a toehold and get a version on the iPad.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. I haven't seen anything like it yet.
Android tablet.
Well, the closest that Apple's own iWork programs can read Microsoft Office documents, and then there's other programs documents to go. The closest thing to actually running Word, PowerPoint, Excel is from a company called CloudOn. OnLive Cloud. Everyone has to have cloud in their names now. OnLive is basically a virtual Windows machine that you run on your iPad, and you are actually controlling a Windows PC running a Windows version of Office. And Microsoft got mad at them for exceeding their license. Apparently, they were buying one copy of Windows and letting anyone use it. So they changed their licensing, so now they're complying with Microsoft's license. But it's a free program where you can, in essence, you have your own virtual PC, virtual Windows machine running a virtual Microsoft Office. So that's Microsoft-specific solution, but there are several other programs for using Microsoft documents on the iPad and iPhone.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. They've become popular enough that people want to provide that service, and Microsoft is angry because people are providing that service.
Yeah.
But again, it has a lot to do, I guess, with the fact that they're not paying for every one of those copies.
No, it's not OnLive. That's a video company. Live Desktop.
All right, but he had another question up for us.
Yeah, I'm all set, David. Thank you.
Okay,
all
sir. Right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Apparently, you hit a few of our little buttons, and consequently, we were we went off on you, and I apologize for that. That is what it is, and sometimes we get a little excited. What, us? Never. But yeah, it's an interesting issue. I love LibreOffice. I use it on every device I have now, and that has a version for it. And I love it. It's fast. It's clean. It's easy. One of the things I have found over time is that when I write a book, and it's, you know, a couple of hundred thousand words, it kind of bogs down Microsoft Office. It bogs down Word terribly, in point of fact. However, LibreOffice, OpenOffice, and its new version, LibreOffice, it doesn't care. It just keeps on keeping on and causes me no trouble. I really like that. It has a macro language if you want to write macro stuff for it. And it does, it's the 80-20 rule, only in this case it's like 95-5. It does about 95% of what Microsoft Office does. Oh, and by the way, it's free. And it even includes a database program, like Microsoft Access is a database program. So it's a word processor, it's a spreadsheet, it's a presentation program like PowerPoint, and it's a database. So you can do an amazing amount of things. Plus, it comes with a drawing program and all kinds of stuff. Very nice stuff. And Theosis on FNet is asking me, it's for tax exempt purchasing.
Oh, it is. Yep.
What happened was they charged me tax, although they're not supposed to, and I'm trying to get that tax refunded, and they're not doing it. I can't get an answer from them. But at any rate, the thing is, we're done. Done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in.
There we go. Done for is right.
Yeah, we're done for another week. Exactly. So thank you all for listening. I want to thank everybody who called in. And those of you who did not call in, please call in earlier next week. It's time now to do something really, really interesting, which is listen to the single best German show on the air anywhere. George will be spinning the tunes. However one says that. Actually, Linda will be spinning the tunes. George will just be standing there talking. Trust me, we know which one does all the work here. I want to thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. where Soundbites on the very appreciative member-supported Jazz 90.1.